Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful as usual.
Yes.
You know, I've got to be wonderful every day.
Well, you know, and that's good because this is another one of those days that's going to be a little bit warm. By the time, though, we get to Tuesday, I have heard, and the reports have changed, but I have heard that one of the days, and I think it's Tuesday, might not be out of the 30s.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I won't be wonderful that day. Golly, it's hard to be wonderful when it's that cold.
It is very cold. Because especially, you know, when it's been like 80 for the last couple of days, and today I think is going to be in the 70s, and then we start to go down a little bit, and I think by the time we get to Tuesday, I have heard in the 30s, if not, it'll be definitely in the 40s. So very, very good, like half of what it is now, or has been.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I know.
Well, I was counting on this 70 to 80 degree weather.
Yeah. Well, I believe I declared it a couple weeks ago that we were home free and spring had arrived.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I thought what you said was true.
Yeah, well, apparently it wasn't.
Apparently you made a mistake.
I made a mistake.
I mean, first one in your life.
I know. Yeah, write it down. It's the first one ever.
That's right. First one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful day anyway today, and if it does get real cold, I'll just have to take it on the lamb.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just snuggle up in a blanket, watch some TV, and eat some soup.
There you go. I like that
idea. Sounds like a plan already. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, the whole point of this conversation is so that people can find out tips and learn how to grow their money so that they can retire happy, wealthy, and early. And that is the whole point. And I know that as people are planning their life early on, like in their 20s and 30s, retirement is not one of those things that they have on the forefront of their minds. They want to go out. They want to live fast. They want to spend a lot of money. Some people, as they get older into their 30s and 40s and 50s, start to curb their behavior a little bit and start to think, okay, it's time to go ahead and plan for retirement. I've had some fun. I need to start being smart. There are others who keep going with the same behavior because they love the feeling of going out and spending money all the time. It gives them a rush. It gives them that feeling of, oh, yeah, I've got something new, some toys to play with. So where in the middle, because someplace in the middle is that sweet spot where you need to be to start planning at a smart age, doing some responsible things, starting to pay down some debt instead of gaining more debt. So what is the age range that you would say is the most ideal to really start planning for retirement and getting responsible?
Well, I think you should start in your 40s. You know, if you start that early, it's an easy deal. I mean, it just works out perfect. If you wait till you're 60, sometimes it's hard, you know, to get enough income coming in, you know, that you can retire early.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
So it's best to start in the 40s.
You know, a lot of people say, well, geez, you know, I'm 40, I'm 45, I'm, you know, 46, even 47. I haven't done anything for retirement. And I think a lot of times we hear that we have to start planning really from the time that we're born. And most people don't. And I was talking to a couple people this past week, and they had both said that they didn't realize that they could start so late in the game, relatively speaking, and still save enough to retire. They thought, well, you know, I didn't start when I was 20 or 30, so I've blown it. And they kind of gave up on the whole concept. And now their eyes are a little bit open to, hey, it's not too late. I can still do this.
Yes, they can. And, you know, if you're 60, you can do it. If you come to us, you've got 250, 300,000 minimum, you know, we can make it work. It's going to take 7 or 8 years. It's not overnight. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. We're not going to make you rich, but we can get you enough income you can live on for the next 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And one thing people don't realize is that when they're done going to their day job, that regular paycheck is gone, they still need to grow that money. And when people start to realize how much they need in order to retire, because you always say the safe number is $1 million, right?
That's right.
They start to realize, okay, if I can get to that, then I'm fine. But if I fall short because I only started in my 40s or even my 50s, you know, I'm not going to make that $1 million. Well, there's no way that I'm going to have enough to retire on and then still keep making money, because at that point, you're almost starting to get that I'm drowning feeling. And so people need to realize that, hey, when you're investing, the key is to invest in something smart. You know, we all see what happens on Wall Street. We see how fast it can go up. We see how fast it can go down. And that's right.
Sometimes it does both, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think people see, you know, how fast it goes up and they get really excited and optimistic. They see how fast it goes down and then they lose all hope and they think, oh, boy, you know, I can't sustain that way. I can't live a life that way. I can't retire that way. So here's the alternative: investing in a life settlement.
Well, when people invest in a life settlement, remember it's a life insurance policy. You know, it doesn't have the ups and downs of the stock market because it can't go down. And when you get paid, you get the full amount that the life insurance policy calls for. Mm-hmm. That's the part I like.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when you're investing in a life policy, you know what you're going to make, you know how much you've got in it, and it works differently than the stock market does.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's really important. And do you find that when people have been in the stock market for years and years and years and years, and then they decide they needed a little something more conservative, something that's actually going to make them money, something that they can, you know, feel good about, you know, that, hey, they're doing something to improve instead of just kind of a wing and a prayer, hopefully it's there today, hopefully it's there tomorrow kind of investment like Wall Street is. Do you find that when people come over, it takes a totally different mindset, and does it take time to get into that frame of thinking?
Well, I think that they have to change their way of thinking. Instead of thinking about risk and thinking about this, they're thinking about investments in a different way. They're saying, okay, I know what I'm going to make on this project. I don't know for sure what it's going to come about, but that's the biggest risk. Is when will it come due? And that's really all you're waiting on, is to see how long it takes for that investment to mature.
Mm-hmm. And so it's really just a waiting game. And I think that probably takes a few minutes for people to change, like you said, change their outlook, because I know a lot of people who are in Wall Street, they're up at night. They're worried. They're you know, a lot of them actually get up in the middle of the night. They go online. They check their portfolio. Do they have anything left? Is it all gone? Because we all know how things, when they're unstable around the world, it can affect, you know, your entire life. And so I talked to a few people who enjoyed the opportunity to let some of that anxiety go by investing in a life settlement, because when you invest in a life insurance policy, it's not affected by anything that's going on around the world.
And the other thing is, you can't mess it up. Had you ever thought about that?
And
that, there any way to mess it up? It's like other investments, you can mess them up pretty bad.
Yeah.
But in a life settlement, you know, it's different. You can't mess it up. It's in a life insurance policy. The person is ill. We know they're going to pass away. It's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely different concept.
Yeah, it's a waiting game. It's really all it is. And I think the biggest lesson that people have to learn when they make this switch to this type of investment is that just relax, you know, enjoy it. Don't panic. Don't worry. You're already in the policy. All you're doing is now is waiting for that policy to mature before you get paid. It's literally that simple. I mean, there's some things involved with it, but when it comes right down to the core of the investment, that's all there is to it, is just waiting.
That's right. And once you've got paid, we do it again and we roll it over, you know, and it works, you know, the way it's supposed to work.
So speaking of how it works, what we're talking about is a person who has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And that's the thing that sets you apart from other people who do this type of thing. you are looking for people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Now, there are a number of other entities that just buy life insurance policies for people who want to sell them. Some, you know, elderly people want to travel, or somebody just needs a little extra money. Maybe they want to, you know, fix up a boat or whatever. That's not what you're doing. You're doing a very specific type of deal. So you're looking for policies for people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. You buy their policy because when they're diagnosed with that, obviously, we all know that cancer treatment is very, very expensive. And so people are looking for a quick way to make a lump sum of money. And for most people, the fastest way is to sell that policy. You're there, you bid on it, and if you're awarded with it, now it becomes an investment opportunity.
That's exactly right. And what I like is, you know, when we get it, we say, okay, do you want to go in this policy? And we're not going to do anything that's not A-rated. And most of ours are double A-rated. So, you know, we know it's a large company. We're not going to do it with some company out of Podunk. You know, all the life insurance companies are huge. They have more money than most banks. So we know that we can depend on those life companies to pay off. And we've never had one that didn't pay the exact amount they owed. And some pay faster than others, which we've discovered that lately. And so when you put your money in a life insurance policy, your biggest concern is when will it come due? Not if I'll get all my money, will I get my principal, will I get my interest? It's just when will I get it?
You know, and that's a good point, too, is the stability of this type of an investment, because people don't have to worry about, one, will they get their money? Because the answer is yes, that's going to happen. And two, the other major concern people, from what I understand when in just conversation, the other concern that people have is, will the money be there? And yes, like you say, the insurance companies, they're bigger than banks. They're, and I hate to say it like this because we all see what happened in 2008, but the insurance companies are bigger than banks. And so you know that the money is there. These institutions are huge. You're not talking about a guy with a lemonade stand on the corner trying to sell lemonade, trying to raise enough money to pay off a policy. These are companies that have been established. They've been here for a long time. That is one of the risks. And we talk about the three major risks with a life settlement type of investment all the time, and that's one of them. So technically, yes, it exists, but it's practically speaking, it's not anything that anybody needs to lose sleep over, because if a life insurance company were to hypothetically go out of business, somebody will step in.
They always have. They've always bought it. Once they know they've got a problem, they'll buy it real quick because of the premium income. The premium income from these companies is humongous. It's like $150 million a year.
Wow.
I mean, $150 million in premium income.
Whew.
It is huge.
You can't. That's too much to ignore. And so when people sit and they say, geez, you know, how do I get a piece of that? Well, it's very, very simple. So the way this process works, somebody's diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. They need their lump sum. They sell their policy. You're there. You bid on it against other companies. You're awarded with the policy, let's say. The policyholder gets that lump sum of money, and they go off and they can do their treatments and do whatever that they need to do to fight cancer. And we wish them all the best, because obviously we hope people survive. Reality is stage 4 cancer is very serious. And so they're up a big, huge battle. They are literally staring up from the base of Mount Everest trying to climb that mountain. So they have the means now to go and do what they need to do, which helps them. But now you're left with this policy. So how does a $1 million policy, for example, let's say you've just bid on this, you've won it, you've been awarded it. How does that become an investment for other people?
Well, because if we are awarded that, we bought it at a price that our clients can make a certain amount of money. So if it's 24 months, they're going to make 24%. If it's 20 months, they're going to make 20%. And, at the end of that term, if it comes in early, they get paid. If it comes in on time, they get paid. Or if it's late, they're still going to get their money. It doesn't matter. It's kind of like it's written in stone because that's what the contract calls for. Their contract dictates this is how much you'll get paid, this is what you've got in it, and this is how much you're going to make. And then if it goes over, it tells them what percent and what they're, what the premiums will cost them. So then the good thing about this whole thing is they know it up front. We don't tell them this after they bought the policy. We tell them before they buy the policy.
You know, and that's another, that is a great point, because I think a lot of people get into situations, they think they have all the facts, but actually when it comes down to it, situations can arise, and maybe a scenario may play out that they didn't account for. They didn't even know to ask a question about it. With a life settlement, it is so well documented. It's such a well-informed type of investment. The risks are very, very low because people know, like you say, if a policy does go over, if the the life expectancy is, say, 18 months and the policy goes to 21 before it expires, people are going to know before they even get into it, before they sign the dotted line, this is how they make their decision. They say, okay, I know that the premiums are going to be this much. I'll have to pay premiums, you know, and they can be, what, monthly, quarterly, yearly? I'm sure they vary, right?
All of ours are quarterly.
Okay.
We do them quarterly. We don't want to do it annual because we want, in case that person should pass away during that time, then we don't want to have to refund the premium. So it's better not to charge them except quarterly, and then we don't have a lot of money in it. And then we don't have to make those refunds if it comes in, you know, during that time.
That's true. Good point. Money going back and forth, you know, it's the less hands you have in the pot, the cleaner the whole dish is going to end up. Good point. Very smart. And then that way, you know, there's you know, people aren't putting more money into it that isn't necessary. They're only putting in a small amount to get through the next quarter. Very smart thinking. So people know ahead of time how much that's going to cost for a quarter. And then they know all kinds of information about the actual policy holder. They know the type of cancer they have, whether it's breast cancer and oral cancer. And there's certain kinds that you look for above others.
That's exactly right. Well, we know pancreatic cancer, and you know we buy all of them that we can. And breast cancer is, I mean, if you will look back, how many breast cancers we had last year that the people died, and then the other one is we had another policy mature this week. It was supposed to have went 12 months, I believe. Anyway, the lady died 11 months out, and she was 31 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's young.
And it's just crazy. I mean, this lady could have done traditional treatment and lived a long time, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But she wouldn't do it. And she didn't do it, and she died. 31 years old. It's upsetting to think that someone this young would give up their life and not take traditional treatment.
Wow. That is so young. What would you say would be an average age of a median age of policy that you bid on?
Well, you know, we do it obviously from about 24 to 74.
Okay.
And most of our people are 50, 60 years old if you take an average.
Okay.
And it seems like the women on breast cancer are younger than that. They're mostly 40, 50 years old. The men seem to be older that we do, but the women with breast cancer are younger. And we just, when we get these policies, they're not doing traditional treatment, and that's why we've bought them. And that's why they're going younger than they should be.
Yeah.
Because they won't do traditional treatment.
Yeah, and any time that somebody ignores traditional treatments like chemo and radiation that we know at least help prolong their life. We know that those things work in most cases. Sometimes they don't, but in many cases, it at least gives them, you know, 6 months, another year, another 2 years, whatever the case may be. Those are you know, the standard treatments. But when people don't do those and they go to, like, Finland and they try to do the magic spring water diet, or they do the secret melon diet, they think that that is going to be, you know, this miraculous cure. And God bless them for trying. But what that does is it gives them, it gives that cancer time to proceed faster. And so then by the time they realize, oh my goodness, this didn't work, now they've got 6 months or maybe more of the cancer progressing. And so now they're just that much more behind the eight ball. And that's why you really, really like to bid on those types of policies.
That's right. And this year, you know, we've done throat cancer, we've done tonsil cancers, and those all expired early. And I think, again, you've got to stick with traditional doctors, traditional treatment, and a lot of these people are not doing it. And when they don't, they die a lot sooner.
So when people...
And of course, we've had people go over. A doctor can't always tell. But then look at all the ones we've had this year that came in early, that they were absolutely wrong as to how sick they really were. They were sicker than we could tell.
That is true. And you say that normally the doctors are a little bit conservative on their life expectancy outlook. You know, so if they think that somebody may last 9 months, they may, you know, rate it at, you know, like 12, 13, 18, something like that, right?
Well, and now they're going to go, instead of 24 months, the new norm is 30 to 35 months. They're changing all of that. They're changing their computer models. They're changing everything. They're getting really, really conservative on this. And this is something they've put out in the news, and we got the newsletter saying they're changing all of this.
Have they said why? Is there a reason?
I think it's because they want to be extra cautious.
Okay.
And of course, we've had some go over. We questioned them. You know, all these that went over, we questioned them anytime it happens. You know, why did it happen? What about the model wasn't exactly right?
So,
and you just can't always tell about a person, their progress on cancer.
If let's just say a hypothetical example here. Say you're looking at a policy that was going to go that normally would be 24 months, and say with the new guidelines, say they've rated it at 30 months. So now it has an extra 6 months on it. What does that do to people's profit margin? Does it increase?
It makes them a little more money.
Uh-huh.
Because instead of 24%, you're going to get 30%. And it may come in at 24 like before, but you're just going to make just a little bit more.
Okay. So it increases the potential profit, even though the policy may still come in at the time that the doctors think, or even less. And if it comes in early, that just means that gap between, you know, that profit margin is even bigger.
That's exactly right. And we bid them some this week, and they are showing 24, 23 months, and that's close. When on million-dollar policies, you know, we want them to be close. If it's far apart, there's something wrong, we don't bid it. We stop right there. But if on $1 million or higher, if it's showing 23 and 24 months, we're bidding it hard because we know it's right. Fasano and the others are right in step.
And you look at these policies, and when you see them, you're looking at every little detail. You're looking at all to make sure all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. So you don't just take anybody's opinion, you know, on the
literally.
Surface.
Literally. No. We go back, we read all the reports, and what I'm looking for is to see if they're taking a heavy pain medication. How bad is the pain? If the pain is really bad, we know that this is probably going to come in early. We look to see how much of the treatment they've completed, and is it still growing. If it says it's slowed down, it means one thing. But if they say the progression is really fast, we know that they're not going to survive it. If it says it's in remission, forget it. We're not buying that policy.
Yeah, you'll run like nobody's business away from that one.
That's right. And every once in a while, I'll have a policy and I'll be reading and I think, boy, this is really good. Then right at the end, it says, we can't even see it now. And I go, oh, no, we're not doing that.
Oh, no.
And it doesn't mean it's not there. It just means it's not showing up.
Yeah.
It's gotten so small nobody can see it.
Yeah, and you're looking for more aggressive types of cancer. You're looking for progression because ultimately, you know, when this becomes an investment for people, you want that investment to pay off as fast as possible. Obviously, from the humanitary side, we want patients to live as long as they can, but there's other companies that will buy policies of people who are in remission or people who are doing well or who are recovering. So there's plenty of hope. It's just this is your niche. This is what you're an expert at, and that's why you look for these specific types of policies. So even before you bid on it, people have already looked at it. Experts have already rated it. They've already given their opinion. You go through it again with a fine-tooth comb so people know that this policy is a good policy to bid on if it's available. You know, if you've bought it, it's good. And so people have access to all this information. They can see the treatments they've had. They can see the treatments they've not had. They can see the type of cancer. They have, like you say, pain medicine information. The more the pain medicine, obviously the more pain that they're in and the more severe the cancer is. So people look at all this before they even choose to get into the policy. And we used to call this page 14, but they moved it, and now it's like...
Yeah, it's right at the end of the contracts now instead of over there on page 14 where we had it. But it still gives the same information. Mm-hmm. Who the person is, what kind of cancer it is, what the face amount of the policy is, which insurance company has the paper, how much they've invested, the rating of the insurance company, we always put that in. Then it tells you if it goes over what you're going to pay, tells you what you're going to make on it, gives you all the information before you sign it. But everybody has to sign off on this because it is important.
So people see this information ahead of time. It's a very well-informed investment. People know the type of cancer. They know all this information. They know, from what we talked about earlier, they know that the policy will pay off. They know that the money will be there because these insurance companies, they're stable. They've been in business for years. They're huge. They're gigantic companies. So is there any reason that people get nervous and maybe don't move forward with the policy? From what people have said, has there ever been anybody that has chosen not to move forward?
I don't know if there has or not. There probably is. And then they regretted it. I think we've had people that were new to us, and they might have said, well, I don't like that policy. I'm not going to do that. And then it comes back. It came in early, and they're going, well, I just didn't know enough about it to do it. That's okay. You know, you've got to make your own decision. We don't encourage people one way or the other. We just give them the facts, you know. Okay. And the facts are, we bought the policy, we think it's great, and you need to get in it if I've bought it. And if they don't, then, you know, they're going to lose out. That's all there is to it.
So when people, when you have, like, new investors that come in and they run into a situation like that, maybe they didn't take the policy off the bat because they were maybe nervous or they didn't understand it or whatever. When they finally get into their first policy and they see how it works and they see it from front to finish, the policy matures, they get paid, and they you know, get their profit in the bank, what's their typical reaction after that, after the first one?
Then they regret it. They say, I wish I'd been in that other policy because it came in early, and this is what everybody made. And you know, I've seen people do that, and then they regretted it.
So going forward, do they have that gung-ho, yeah, put me in as much as you can?
Yes, they say, okay, Faye, I'm going to leave it up to you now.
Uh-huh.
And then so then they use my judgment usually on the policies. And, you know, I want them to have access to everything I do. I want to be knowledgeable of what we're doing.
And that's the great thing, is that it is such a well-informed policy. People aren't just guessing. I mean, this is all the numbers are there. You're looking at the metrics. You're looking at the history. You're looking at the payout. You're looking at the risks. You're looking at all this information, and it seems like a win-win. And I know that you have clients that have been with you for years and years and years. I would imagine, and correct me if it's wrong, I would imagine probably after the first two policies, maybe three at the most, I'm just guessing, that once they get through that stage, when a policy comes due and you say, hey, person X, here's this policy, do you want in? I imagine at that point, they don't even look at it anymore. They're just like, yeah, put me in it.
Yeah, they figure that we know more about it than they do. And so, you know, they just said, they use your best judgment on it.
Okay. But the great thing
is, we try to do
is getting into this, and I know, like, you know, like we talked about earlier, it's a different mindset. People may be a little bit nervous because they may not understand, because they've had years of uneasiness. You know, they've almost been, their behavior has been trained by their time in the stock market. They know that it can go up. They know it can go down. You know, so I imagine at the beginning, people are waiting for, oh my gosh, what's the bad news? Where's the other shoe? When's it going to drop? You know, there's got to be something hidden in here. I'm waiting for my portfolio to go down. And I can understand how they would be a little bit leery, a little bit gun shy, because they've been trained to think otherwise, especially if they're coming fresh from the stock market into something that's a little bit more conservative like this. I imagine, you know, I can understand that behavior.
Well, they're used to it going up and down severely, like week by week. You know, and this just doesn't happen. It's, you know, we just wait for it to mature, and we know what we're going to get paid, and that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's. I know it sounds super easy, but it literally is that simple. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every day around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting things to the table, whether it's a place to go in Texas or some Texas history or, you know, something about a holiday or some interesting facts. So what are we talking about today?
It's President's Day on Monday.
Well, that's right.
Do you remember that?
Jeez Louise, in my mind, I went right from Valentine's Day right to Easter.
No, you can't do that. We have President's Day in between. Now, do you know officially whose birthday it really was on Monday?
George Washington.
It was. And it was always celebrated on the third Monday in February.
Mm-hmm.
And then they added Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, he was on the 12th.
That's right. And it goes back to the 1880s. And he was, Washington was commander of the Continental Army during the American Revolution. As you know, he's the first president of the United States. And in 1968, Congress passed the Uniform Monday Holiday Bill. And it moved a number of federal holidays to Monday. Well, you know what it was for federal workers. It always is.
Yeah.
And it gave them a number of long weekends throughout the year. But a lot of people said, no, they didn't like that. And then it was proposed that Washington's birthday be renamed President's Day, down to the birthday, of course, Washington, which was February 22nd, and Lincoln's, which was February 12th. And Lincoln's was never a federal holiday. Did you know that?
It wasn't.
No, his was never an official federal holiday.
I did not know that.
So, following a lot of discussion, Congress rejected the name change. So the bill went into effect in 1971, and it became commonly accepted for retailers. They used the name to promote sales and the proximity to Lincoln's birthday.
Oh, geez. You know, and speaking of those sales, I never remember which one it is until the other day I started to see the commercials, and I realized President's Day is the big one for furniture.
Oh, no, I didn't know which one.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's like,
oh my gosh.
Each one of these holidays have some kind of a, you know, sometimes it's like linens and towels, and then other holidays.
Oh, they have a white sale. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. President's Day, I think, is the furniture one, because I've seen all the ads.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But a lot of people don't even remember that. You know, it was Washington's birthday, really. And then they said, well, we'll just add Abraham Lincoln to that.
Yeah. Combine them both into one.
Yeah, he never got his federal holiday. They celebrate it in a lot of states, but not federally.
Really?
Yeah, it was never a federal holiday. I didn't realize that.
Interesting.
So, anyway, Monday is a federal holiday, President's Day. And like you said, they'll have all the sales. But they do have parades and a lot of stuff in Washington and other places honoring the presidents.
You know, and I think that's important. You know, sometimes we look forward to a 3-day weekend, and that's great. And sometimes, you know, when we do have a holiday like this, it's more of a somber time. It's a time to, you know, remember and pay homage and things like that. But this is one of those where we celebrate, you know, some key presidents of our country. We celebrate some of our history. We celebrate things like that. So it is a time to celebrate. You know, obviously the weather may or may not be good for barbecues and things like that, but still, it's a day off to kind of relax, and it's okay to go ahead and celebrate.
I think so, too. And, of course, you know, our children are going to grow up dumb if we don't remember all the things that are really important.
That's true.
Do you realize that?
Yes.
If we don't tell them about Washington, if we don't tell them about Lincoln, if we don't tell them about the Gettysburg Address, I mean, all the things that mean so much to us, if we don't tell our children, they're going to grow up not knowing anything about our country.
Yeah, yeah. I hear a lot of parents that, you know, talk about like curriculum and things like that. Not just, you know, whether it's here or, you know, other parts of the country. It's just a general discussion. You see it a lot on social media too, about how a lot of history is being rewritten. A lot of kids don't know. I know a millennial. He's in his mid-20s. He does not know the Pledge of Allegiance. Just turned 26. Does not know the Pledge of Allegiance.
And, you know, every school has always, first thing in the morning, you do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes.
I mean, as far as I can remember, when you go to school, you stand up and you say the Pledge of Allegiance with your hand over your heart.
Oh, yes. Everybody. It used to be like when you have the big open rooms and then you'd have like the dividers between the classrooms. Everybody would go out into to the center little open area and there would be a flag, whether it's like on the cement wall, you know, on one end, and they would all face it and they would all stand there and they would all line up, you know, and it was a show of proper respect. And I think that was important. I don't know if they still do it quite so regimented, but I think it's important to keep a lot of our traditions alive, you know, keep that history.
It's called assembly. We went to assembly to do the flag. I know exactly.
Yeah, assembly.
Yeah, we went to assembly. Mm-hmm. And now I don't know, you know, a lot of school teachers don't even want to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
We have communists in our schools. I hate to say that.
Yeah. Well, people need to know these things. We need to, you know, brush up on our facts. I think a lot of times, you know, sometimes people learn these things to get through the test when they're in school. But a lot of the information doesn't always get retained. So it's nice to have like President's Day and other holidays throughout the year that really help reinforce and remind us of our history. Because if it wasn't for our history, we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here. Now, in Texas, I think all schools observe this. I think they all teach the Pledge of Allegiance. I think they, you know, especially history in Texas is more important than anything. You know how we feel about our Texas history.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
It is big.
Yeah.
Now, in other states, they ignore half of their history, but we don't.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's important. I think that's one of the things that makes Texas, you know, stand out against other states is that there is such an emphasis on the history because, you know, it's important to know not only where you came from, but, you know, some of the mistakes.
How you got here.
Who are the key
people? And who died to make us free.
Exactly. It's important to know those things so that you can respect, you know, the past and the reasons that we're even here. It's so important.
And remember, Bowie and all these people that were here, look what all they did to get us away from Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look at all the battles, the Battle of San Jacinto, all these, Goliad, and, you know, Goliad was a big battle, and, you know, the cannon is still there on the courthouse square.
Yeah, yeah.
The Texans said to Mexico, come and get it.
Mm-hmm. They dared them.
And they dared them, and they mowed them down.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, so Yeah, I mean, it's great. So President's Day is on Monday, federal holiday. Banks are closed. Other federal
any federal facility will be closed. Yeah.
So and I know a lot of people, you know, they forget. They drive up to the bank at like 9:30. They see nobody there and they think, yeah, I'm going to get right in and right out. And then they
don't realize the bank is closed.
Yeah. And then you see them walk away with their head down. I forgot.
They should have went on Friday or Saturday to the bank.
Yeah, yeah. So if you have banking you need to get done next week on Monday, you may want to go like right now.
Yeah, now's a good time to do it.
Yeah,
and the banks are open today to what, 2?
I don't know. I think some of them are noon. Some of them might be 2. I think it just varies.
Yeah, I was thinking 2, but I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's President's Day on Monday. And it was a great time to reflect, and people should, and celebrate it as it should be.
Yeah, maybe brush up on some history.
That's what I really wanted to say, was go back and study some of your history on it.
Yeah, Google something.
And see if your kids even know anything about it.
Yeah.
See what they're teaching.
Yeah, do a little pop quiz for the kids.
And you know, if you're riding with your kids, a good thing to do is to play all these games with them about our forefathers. And we always did.
Yeah.
And I don't know if most people do that. We would, you know, play games. You know, which state did this? Which state did that? You know, who was president that year? Name the presidents. And I've seen little kids that could name all the presidents.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
and it
impressive.
Would take me a few minutes to do all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I was fixing to say most adults I know can't name but 3 or 4, and that's as far as I can get.
And, you know, Harry Truman was one of the poorest presidents that we've ever had. You know, they went back to Missouri. You know, he wouldn't take any money from the government, you know. They all offered to help him to do all this. He said, no, it's not right. Could you imagine an honest guy like old Harry Truman?
Yeah, boy, you don't find that happening very often.
No. And, you know, they went back and lived in that little house there in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you think about all these guys, different presidents did different things.
They did. They did.
And,
yeah.
A lot of them were really great presidents.
Yeah.
A lot of them weren't, and the people kicked them out, you know?
Yep. Yep. It's a wonderful tradition, you know, like we say, some things are good, some things are bad, and hopefully we've learned from the things that are bad, which is probably what has made America probably one of the greatest countries in the whole world, is the journey that we've been on, you know?
It is, and it's a wonderful journey to go back and go down through it and say, gosh, you know, what a country,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Best country in the world, and it's a free country.
Yeah. So happy early President's Day. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
The phone number is 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, let me point out real quick, that phone number is your office number. It's not where you are right now. It's not your cell phone. It's not your home phone. It's not your neighbor's phone. It's.
I love that it's not your neighbor's cell phone. You are bad today.
Yeah. So you can call it right now if you want to and leave a message. That's the office number, and you'll get that message on Monday. Are you working? You're back at work on Monday, right?
Yes.
Okay. I figure, because you don't take off very much at all.
We don't take hardly anything off. There's several federal holidays we do take off, but we don't take them all off.
Yeah. So you're always working. You're always making people some money. So people can go ahead and call that number, leave a message, and then you'll call them back, and you'll make an appointment. They can come in and talk to you. But the whole point of all this is learning how to grow their money. And so we're talking about life settlements. We talked about a couple of the risks. One of the big ones was if it goes over, in case that happens, people know the premium that they'll have to pay. We talked briefly about these companies are too big to fail, and in case one of them does go out of business, if it should ever happen, there are tons of other people that would step in. Those are two of them, but there's one more risk people need to know about.
Well, and of course, the other risk is it's not liquid during that time. It can't be liquid if you're in a life insurance policy. We put you in a life insurance policy for safety, you know? You've got a life insurance company that is obligated to pay you when it matures. Mm-hmm. It's not us paying you. It's the life insurance company that pays you. And people need to know that.
And so really how this works is that they, like we said earlier, people just wait for the policies to mature, and then they get paid. It's literally that simple. I know people are saying, well, there's got to be something, there's got to be something else to it, or else Wall Street wouldn't exist. Well, that's not necessarily true, because people have a number of options. So what is the one thing that you hear from people? Because usually when people have been in the stock market for years and years and years, they get used to that behavior. They're familiar, even if it's not making them money, or even if it's not making them as much as they want, or even if they've lost money, you know, what's the one thing that has made somebody go from such a familiar type of setting like Wall Street to make the leap? Do you find that there's like an event that happens to...
Well, I know I had people come to me this week, and I won't tell you which brokerage house, and they said, hey, I'm not doing well at all. I thought I would do better. So they're moving that money over to us. I also had a man that has just recently retired, and he's moved out by El Paso, and or Del Rio, excuse me, and bought a ranch out there. And he came to me, and he said, Faye, I'm just not happy with the market. He said, I want to talk to you about this. We sat down, we talked, and he said, this is my kind of deal. He said, being in the market is not for me. I need to get out. And he called me from another town and said, I'm coming through. Would you wait for me? Would you see me this week? I said, yeah, I'll see you. And, of course, you know, I had a cold, but I was able to see him and make a deal with him.
Cool. So it seems like people just at some point they get tired. They look at their portfolio. It's not what they were hoping. Maybe they're, you know, 5, 10 years, 15 years away from retirement. They thought by this time they would have made a little bit more or a lot more than they have. And so it's time to make some kind of adjustment. And I think people don't really know what other options there are. So when people come to you, do you find that they're starting to get a little bit more scared of the stock market, or are they just...
I think they're scared of the returns. It's not what they thought it would be. You know, they hear all this stuff about Wall Street, all this money that's being made and lost, and they just know they're going to get part of it. But I find lots of times they're not getting part of it.
Yeah. They think they're going to hit that big magic golden egg on Wall Street, and it just doesn't happen. It happens for some people, but that's a select few.
That's right. It doesn't always happen to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, they get disgusted, they get frustrated, and then they come to us and put their money with us.
And the way that this whole thing works is it's not just a one investment and done type of plan. This is something that you'll do over many years. And when we say many years, it could be 5, 10, 15, whatever, you know, the investor wants to do. You put them in this plan, and so they're in a number of policies. Hopefully, you know, it's always rotating. I mean, that's the ideal goal, is that people are well diversified, so there's always something that's coming in. Something is paying off, and then you take that, you reinvest it in another policy, and that's really, you know, the ebbs and flows are what keeps people in the program. This is what keeps making people money. It's just a steady climb. And before you know it, you know, you've doubled your money. You've made enough to retire. And then once you do retire, then you've got to keep it going, because you still want to make money.
Income. You're going to need that income every month that you get off of your interest.
Exactly. So do you find
it just keeps going.
Do you find that people... what kind of adjustment do they make when they realize, okay, yes, this is a little bit more secure, it's a little bit more stable, it makes a lot more sense, it just takes a little bit more time, it's a slow, steady climb, but it's all about patience. Do you find that people relax pretty quickly, or?
Well, a lot of people get anxious, and they're calling me, you know, and we go over their portfolio and how it's doing, and if it's on target, if it's not, if it's late, if it's early, you know, we talk about it. And then we'll do them a printout, and that helps a lot. We've got this new way to do a printout. tells them every policy is matured, the ones that haven't matured, and the names are all there to help them.
So for the person who's listening right now, who's evaluating the situation, who's listening to everything you're saying, who's saying, yeah, I am kind of sick of Wall Street. I'm not getting what I need out of it. I am a little bit nervous about what might be coming in the months and the years ahead. I need to start coming up with another solution. But I may be too old. I may not have done enough. I may not have enough to work with. What would be a decent age that somebody should start, and how long should they expect to get to that? Now, I know that everybody's situation is different. I understand that. But just a general median, just a ballpark figure of how long it might take the average investor to get where they need to be.
I think it's going to take them 7 years.
Okay.
I think it'll take about 7 years to get where they need to be. Now, that's depending on how much they come with in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I can't give you an exact time, because some people come to us with a lot of money, doesn't take as long. Some people come to us with a smaller amount of money.
Yeah. And it's okay, and, you know, wherever as somebody's starting, you'll put them on the trajectory they need to be on with what they have to work with. So you can work all that out, but they need to come see you.
They've got to come and talk about how soon they're going to need money, how many years out they're going to start taking money, and when are they going to retire. It's all real important.
Yeah. I mean, this is, we're talking about a full a plan here. You know, it's not only getting to retirement, but once you get there, what kind of a budget are you going to need? You know, you're going to make sure that everything is paid off. There's no house debt. There's no automobile debt. You're going to get them to that place that they need to be. You're going to map all this out so they know what to plan for, what to expect. They know the goal going in. I got to get all these things paid off. No credit card debts. Once I get to retirement, then I'm going to need this much per month to live on. I want to use this much to keep reinvesting. You're going to map all this out, so it's a complete picture for people when they come see you.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, we have to know all the facts in order to help them.
Okay. So when people are looking at this and they're saying, yeah, I want to do this, they should know that in order to do a life settlement program, they do need to be accredited. And what does that mean?
Well, they've either got to have $200,000 a year in income, or they must be worth $1 million without their home. And, you know, it's pretty simple. A lot of people say, well, I don't know. They'll go home and add up to see if their assets are enough, if they don't qualify on income. If they qualify on income, that's fine. Then they don't have to add everything up. But if they don't qualify on income, they've got to go add up their assets and see if they qualify that way.
That includes rental properties. It includes
their farm, their cattle. I mean, the things of value.
401ks from jobs that they left years ago. Those can't.
That's right. So, yes, and a lot of people forget. They've got an old 401k or maybe two. I've had people that have had two 401ks, old ones, mm-hmm. that they needed to get moved back.
Okay. So people are sitting here and they're saying, they're kind of evaluating right now in their heads, kicking some numbers around. They're saying, I'm not really sure. So then they may be looking for, okay, let's see if there's a plan B. How does it change if they want to do like a husband, wife, spouse kind of deal?
Okay. Husband and wife have to have $300,000 a year in income if it's husband and wife.
Okay.
If it's just husband, it's $200,000. Husband and wife, it's $300,000.
Okay. So now,
as I said, they can go on assets either way.
Okay. So there's a number of options right there.
Yes, there is.
So now, when somebody says, I'm pretty sure I'm a little bit below that, I'm not going to meet the requirements, don't worry. There are other options to still get ready for retirement, because the whole goal is to get ready for retirement. It doesn't necessarily have to be through a life settlement. You want to get them there however you can. And so there's a number of other options.
That's right. They can do annuities. They're guaranteed. You know, I've never seen it like it is now on annuities. Used to, people understood them. They don't seem to understand them now, that your money is guaranteed forever. It's guaranteed from the time you put it in to the time you take it out. And, you know, it's not like the stock market, you know. It works a lot better than the stock market. It's a guaranteed income for life.
And that's important.
And, Because, it's really important for a lot of people.
Yeah, because people are very nervous about the stock market right now. I keep hearing people saying, well, gosh, you know, I'm getting a little bit nervous. People are seeing a lot of major investors starting to pull chunks of money out. And I think that's starting to send up some at least some red flags to some people who are really monitoring this very closely. It's starting to make them a little bit unnervous and uneasy. And when people get that uneasy feeling, they start to think, well, geez, maybe I should do something before, you know, something, you know, traumatic happens. And so people are kicking these numbers around. And so they're thinking, well, geez, I'm not really sure. This might be a good plan for me. It's something I need to go home and talk about. And so if somebody wants to go home and talk about it with their spouse, maybe one of them comes see you. Maybe they both come see you. Maybe they make a couple of appointments. How do typical first-time investment work? Do they make a number of appointments? Is it in and done?
Well, they make an appointment to come in. If they come without their wife, then they come back the second time with their wife. Or lots of times they come and they can make the decision right then. And some of them can't. Some of them say, I'll see you in a week or 2 weeks, maybe a month. It doesn't matter. I just tell them, go home, think it over, talk it over with your wife, see what you want to do. Come back and tell me what you want to do.
Okay, so it's all in the investor's hands.
It's in their hands. It's not in our hands. It's not our decision. And we'll help them if they want the help.
Yeah, this is your money, not Faye Bagby's money.
That's right, it's not my money.
not the neighbor's money. This is their money, and they make it to make the decision on how they move forward with it.
That's exactly right.
All right. So for somebody who's kicking this around and wants to see, okay, yeah, I'm very interested in this. I want to make an appointment next week, but maybe they want to come in with some information. Maybe they want to be informed. So what should they do this weekend before they come see you to get ready?
They need to bring me a copy of everything they want me to look at. If they want me to look at all their investments, they need to bring it in and let me look at it.
Okay. So maybe take this weekend, a day or two, gather that information up, do whatever you need to find out where you are so you walk in with some kind of a well-informed estimate, and you can kind of talk to them. Put the plan together, say, here's ideally where we want to be. Here's ideally, you know, where you are now. Here's, you know, to get from point A to point B. This is probably what we're going to want to do. And so just come in with a little bit of information and you'll take care of the rest. So I assume you have availability for appointments this coming week, right?
We do. And we'll be glad to have them and sit down with them and talk about their situation.
Perfect. Okay, Faye. So one last time for people to make that appointment, what's the number they need to call?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.